Ladies and gentlemen, I am here, I am back, and this is Last Man Standing, your friendly neighborhood podcast where when it rains, it pours, but when the sun is out, the sun is out, and we are here doing our best to find out what it means to be a good man in 2023.
Every time I look into your lovely eyes, I see a love that money just can't buy.
The song we just heard was a snippet that I stole from YouTube from a movie that I have not seen, I don't know, 15, 20 years maybe. The film is called Boys on the Side, and I really wish that I could tell you the full synopsis of the film, but I don't really recall all of it. But this particular scene has carried me through some very emotional times. It's one of those scenes that I just could never get out of my head. Whoopi Goldberg is singing with another woman whose name I can't recall at the moment. I should have written it down. My apologies. But this woman is dying. A cancer that she has been living with and dealing with for several years is taking its toll. But they've invited friends to their home for her birthday. And the woman's sitting more or less in a corner. And she's doing her best to be happy, despite the illness, despite really not being able to do or say much. And then they start to sing this song because someone's playing it on the piano. And for years, this scene, this song has just broken my heart. Now, the reason I played this clip, and I don't mean to sound like some weird conspiracy theorist, but here we go. Excuse me. We all have cell phones, right? We all have cell phones. I have, you know, 3 Alexa devices in the house for video calls and music and news. And we all know what it's like to be having a conversation with someone, and then the very next moment you look at your phone, there's some kind of weird advertisement for exactly what you were talking about. And it's creepy, but we know it's there. We know Big Brother is always listening. At this point in life, there's absolutely no reason to ask anyone to delete your browser history when you die, because it's all out there in the world somewhere. But interestingly enough, at a moment in my life recently, when there are some things happening in my head and in my heart, I was not looking up anything on my phone. I was not verbally having these conversations with anyone. This is just something that was happening in my head. And then I look down at my phone, I'm scrolling through Facebook, and there's not necessarily an advertisement, but there was an advertisement for a local film and cinema center here in my hometown that's going to be doing what they call a death cafe. If you've never heard this term, which I had never heard until now, a death cafe is more or less a group of people getting together for coffee, for coffee, for tea, for snacks, and they all sit around just having a conversation about death. It's not a support group. They don't want to be seen as a support group. They're not there for people who are specifically looking for an outlet because they've had a death in the family or because someone is dying. They just talk about death. And that can mean so many things, right? We've all lost someone. We all know someone who is sick or has cancer or we're afraid that they're going to die. We've all seen, I mean, this is America. We've all seen the 9 million school shootings that haunt us. As a matter of fact, as I'm recording this podcast, there's something on the news right now where there was another school shooting where several children and several teachers have been killed. So I'm reading this little article thing on my Facebook and I'm thinking that maybe this is something I would like to do. I would like to go here and see what other people are thinking on the topic of death and dying. And in recent days, as if there aren't enough horrors in the world, a factory here in my hometown had a gas leak. A gas leak with a massive, massive explosion that has completely leveled buildings where multiple people have died. Some people's, I don't want to say bodies, but some people. May possibly still be missing in the rubble. Our local hospital is basically shut down just because of the sheer number of casualties and injuries. So I feel like death is in the air right now and it's driving me batty. Again, to bring it back to my point, I feel like death is just lingering over me lately. Not necessarily the idea of my health or me dying or some imaginary situation where I'm going to get hit by a car. It's not like that. But I've been looking back on things, having four women in my life that I have called mom, and all of them have died. Right now, my father lives with me. He has dementia. He's 76 years old. Not my biological father, but my father. The only man I have ever known as my true father. In more ways than one, he's dying. And then these accidents happen, these shootings happen, and somewhere in the back of my head, the gears are just turning, and I'm thinking about my wife and I and our life together. And I'm worried about what happens when one of us dies. Will she be okay if I died today? Would I be okay if she died today? Would our children be okay? Would our families get through it? And I just feel like there's a cloud chasing me down, making me think about death and dying and what happens to the people left behind. Because that's what death is. Death is a scar. A scar on everyone left behind, everyone that's still living and has to deal with the aftermath of someone else's departing. And I don't know what to do with that information lately. I say this because, and this is basically where a lot of this is stemming from right now. I was at my monthly group with these gentlemen at the forum, the Forge Forum. And in one of these conversations, I was expressing that, you know, we were talking about grief. And I was expressing that growing up, I've had four different women in my life. My biological mother, my great-grandmother, a woman who I originally called my aunt, but was more like my mother. And then most recently, the woman who took me in and raised me from the age of 16 until the day she passed away. And all of these women are gone. And I was telling these other gentlemen in this conversation that I felt like I was becoming jaded. I was becoming cold to the idea of death and dying and losing people. And then I realized that it had taken me nearly 3 months to truly mourn the passing of my mom. Literally months before I could truly break down and cry, because I was so busy trying to be strong and trying to keep it pushing, trying to be okay in the eyes of my wife and my family and my friends, trying to be strong, trying to be a good man, right? But let's face it, there is nothing good or strong about death. It comes for everyone. Whether you expect it or not, even if you can look it dead in its face and know that it's coming, when it truly actually happens, we are all lost. And then, ironically enough, my head keeps going back to this quote that I'm probably going to butcher because my memory is terrible sometimes. But it's something like, it is a man's duty in life to prepare his children for his death. And I keep thinking about that. I keep wondering, am I doing the due diligence to my children and preparing them for when something happens? Because you see, as I look at it right now, I'm preparing my children for life, right? I'm teaching my teenagers to do their own laundry, to keep their house clean, to do dishes, to cook, to take care of themselves, to be good people. I'm preparing them for life, because ultimately my wife and I are going to have to send them out into the world, right? So I'm preparing them to live. But are we preparing them to deal with our death? And that's something I keep worrying about right now. I mean, the last couple of weeks I've been going through some things emotionally. I have friends who are going through some traumatic times. And I keep wondering if I've prepared them for anything when my wife and I are no longer here. I'm not even sure I know how to start that conversation. And then ultimately, at least right now anyway, I just feel like I have not done my job. Because we all just live our day-to-day life. And we don't think about what happens if we walk out the door and get hit by a bus. We don't stop to think about, you know, every time we get in the car to go to work, what happens if we get T-boned and we're gone? So now I'm just feeling like an irresponsible asshole because we need life insurance. We need to figure out who's going to take the kids if something does happen to us. We need to look at things like funeral arrangements and burial plots or cremation societies that can help out with things. We have to look at all of our friends and family and how we connect with them. And how we prepare everyone. for the day we die. So again, right now I'm just lost. I really haven't given it enough thought about what happens when I'm gone. Because I'll be honest with you, I'm an emotional person. I take things to heart. I feel like some parts of me have gotten a little cold over the years, because how many funerals can you go to without feeling like you're just all cried out? But ultimately, I know that we owe it to one another to have these conversations. And it's ironic because as my mother was falling further into her illness, these were the conversations I was forcing her into. Like, Mom, listen, I know it's uncomfortable. I know it's not a happy conversation, but we need to talk about what you want for funeral arrangements. We have to talk about what's going to happen with Pop if you pass away before he does. We have to talk about your finances. We have to talk about your taxes. We have to talk about bills. We have to talk about the things that you want kept or thrown away, or who gets what. We have to have these conversations. And now here I am at the barely ripe old age of 40, and I have had none of these conversations. And I don't just mean I haven't had these conversations with my wife. I mean, I haven't really had these conversations with myself. And that's where accountability comes into play. This is the part where it can no longer just be an idea or a thought. This has to be something that I write down and organize, something I give structure to. Because if I die tomorrow, there's a whirlwind of things headed for my wife and my children. As I'm sitting here writing this podcast, I know that in a couple of hours, my wife is going to be driving home and anything could happen. The last text that I sent my wife to say, hey, I'm still here. I'm just upstairs packing and doing laundry so we can go to our honeymoon. But I'm not stopping to think that my wife might not make it home today. So now I feel like I've fallen short. Not just in the idea of death or an accident and how we deal with it, but it's pushing me back to that more emotional side of who I am as a person. And it's making me recollect the idea that it is extremely important to be honest with people. When you feel like you need to tell someone you love them, fucking tell them. I don't care if it's 2 a.m. and you just woke up from a shitty dream and it made you think about someone. Send them a text. Just say, I love you. Because you don't know when it's going to be your last chance to do it. Treat people kindly, because when you see someone today, that might be the last fucking time that you see them. And I'm sure you can hear the cracking in my voice right now, because this feeling, this cloud that has been kind of chasing me for the last couple of weeks, it hit me pretty hard yesterday. I'm scrolling through Facebook. I'm seeing all these posts about this explosion at our local factory. And every time I see a new post, the numbers are just going up. More injured, more dead. People still not being found. Families torn apart. I don't mean to be specific. I don't mean to bring up anyone else's business, but I was reading one of the articles and everyone is saying how lovely this woman was and how helpful she always was, how kind and sweet she always was. And then they start talking about her life, and this woman was a mother. This woman had just became a grandparent. And now she's gone. She's gone, and all of these people left behind are scarred.
her husband, her children, her grandchildren that will be living a life not knowing her. Death is a scar. When you are sick or when you are dying, when you are hurt, that's just the wound opening up, right? That's the initial cut. That's the bleeding. But when we die, there is a scar left on everyone that we've ever known. People who 5 years from now are going to be on Facebook and a memory's going to pop up and it's going to be your face. And all they're going to want to do is sink down into a pit and cry because you were no longer here. See, death is freedom for the one that dies, right? Death is freedom for the dead. It is a prison for the people left behind. It is a never-ending memory of something we fear we may never see again. A person's laugh that we fear we may never hear again. The ability to hold someone's hand or look into someone's eyes is gone. And that's the cloud I'm living in right now. I don't want to say it's a cloud of anger. It's not a cloud of fear. It's just this thought in my head that the people I smile at every day may not be here tomorrow. Or maybe they'll be here and I won't be. But what's most important right now, as I said, is preparing for it, understanding it, knowing that it doesn't just happen and that's it. You know, it's not like a movie. You don't watch the movie and then you watch the credits and it's over. Death is lingering. And we have to deal with that. So I'm going to take a quick break. Shift gears, find something maybe not so morbid to talk about, and then we'll try this again.
This is the stage where singers become superstars, and this is American Idol.
So we all know that I'm a sucker for music. I'm a sucker for good music, for great lyrics. So yes, I am one of those millions of Americans that sits at home every now and again and watches The Voice, watches America's Got Talent, watches American Idol. And today, I spent the majority of my morning doing laundry, packing bags as my wife and I prepare to go on our honeymoon. And just after lunchtime, I decided to sit down and take a little break, kind of do a little re-catch-up on American Idol. And then came the tears. Because we also know I'm a sap. I am a sucker for a good story, for an emotional song. This young lady walks into the room. She's wearing big, chunky heels. Patent leather red pants, jacket. She's carrying her daughter with her. The little lady couldn't have been more than 5 or 6 years old. And then to go into her background story. She was pregnant and a single mother by the time she was 17. As a child, she was in and out of the system, as we say. In and out of foster care and foster homes, bounced all around. And then they tried to do the more personal thing. You know, they asked her where she was from, what she did for a living. And very shakingly, not quite embarrassed, just shakingly, she admitted that she is currently an exotic dancer. She's raising her daughter on her own. She's doing what she can to get by, but she's not letting go of her dream of being a dancer. So she sings this song. I don't even remember what the first song was. She sings this song, and she has a beautiful voice, an amazing voice. And about halfway through it, they try to push her
a little further because they know that there's more to her. They know that there's more to her voice, more power. And she does okay. Not phenomenal, but she does okay. Excuse me. But ultimately, by the end of it, they rejected her. They told her no, that they think she needs more practice. She needs to go home and spend more time dedicating it to her craft so she can lose the nerves and find the strength in her voice. Meanwhile, her daughter is in the room. You know, everyone's holding her, everyone's talking to her, everyone's playing with her. The little girl's on the side of the room playing with the golden tickets. And she's trying so hard to not fall apart and cry because she's heard these no's. And then something happened. Something kind of remarkable happened. One of the judges came out to talk to her, to give her a hug. And they said, I'll tell you what. I'm a firm believer in second chances. So I would like you to come to our next audition. Not next year, not next season, but the very next audition, which is in just in a different city. And it's beautiful. It's a lovely gesture. To a degree, I think it showed some sense of humanity from the judges. And the young lady is very thankful. She promises to be there. She knows she's going to come back. She's going to go home and work a little harder. And then she leaves the room. And interestingly enough, everything that I've just said, none of that is where I cried. This young lady leaves the room, and the judges sit back down. They're looking at each other. They're kind of, you know, motioning back and forth. And Lionel Richie said something that blew my heart apart. Lionel Richie looks over at Katy Perry and says, listen, I want you all to understand something. I need you to understand why there was no real strength or power in her voice while she was singing this love song. It's because she couldn't connect to it. Because this young lady, who has been in and out of the foster care system, bounced from home to home, abandoned by her real family, who is a single mother at the age of 17, who was abandoned by her boyfriend and now is raising a child on her own. How do you sing about love when love has done nothing but betray you your entire life? He said this woman does not understand love because every time that she has let love in, it has betrayed her. And fuck, when I tell you I cried, I'm not talking like single teardrop cry. I'm not talking like I couldn't catch my breath for a second cry. I'm talking about full-on waterworks streaming down my face because I thought, holy hell, how many of us are living that story? Me. I'm a foster kid. By the time I was 15, I had lived in 4 or 5 different households. Now, granted, a lot of those households were different family members, but it's the same story. It's being bounced from place to place to place and never really feeling like you had anything stable or sturdy in your life. And when you're old enough to look back on it, that's exactly what it feels like. It feels like every time that you sat down to let love in, the world kicks you when you're down, and it feels like love has betrayed you yet again. So how do you learn to let love back in? How do you learn to trust people and hope that they are looking at you with good intentions? And when I tell you my heart broke for this woman, I can't even imagine what it takes for an 18, 19-year-old girl to raise a child on her own. I can't understand. I can't fathom what it's like to be, 24, 25? Living her life, doing what she can to make ends meet as an exotic dancer, which there's absolutely nothing wrong with, but let's face it, in our society, people immediately see something as being wrong with her. But she's doing it. She's making her money. She's paying her bills. She's raising her child. And she still has enough fucking faith and love in her heart that she was willing to travel to these auditions for American Idol because she's still holding on to a fucking dream that she can do something, that she can be better. And then in grand television fashion, after Lionel Richie breaks my fucking heart, they go back to this girl who's, you know, standing in front of the camera and saying that she's going to be at the next show. She's going to do the next audition. She appreciates the chance. And then with tears in her eyes, she's still looking at the camera and she just burst out. And she says, I need to change my life. And I don't think I've ever resonated more with another human being that I've never met in my life, that I've only seen, you know, 3 minutes of on a television set. When she said, I need to change my life. She needs to break away from feeling hurt. She needs to break away from that sense of abandonment, from being bounced from house to house to house, from one family to another family, to a couple, to a single woman, to all these places that she's had to try to call home, but has never been able to call home. Not truly, not really. She needs to break away from the heartache that came with becoming a teenage mom who was abandoned by the father of the child and left to struggle. I have never... I'm starting to stutter because I'm finding the words difficult to even bring up. I need to change my life, was what this woman said. Lionel Richie, of all people, looked at this woman and said, she can't sing about love because love has done nothing but betray her time and time again. But we can do something different for her. We can step in and be another chance to show her that love is real and love is possible, and that even when life seems like it's just never-ending drama and suffering and there's no way out of it, there are people out here that will see your light, grasp onto it for you, and help pull you up. Lionel fucking Richie, ladies and gentlemen. And now I'm going to go take a break. All right. So I'm not sure if this is going to bring this episode full circle or not, because we started off a little bit on the morbid side, talking about death and dying and sadness. And then somewhere in the middle there, we talked about the beauty of showing someone love and what love is capable of, how it can heal. So maybe this is full circle, maybe it's not, but whatever. This is what I'm talking about. Life is beautiful, people. I hope that you recognize that. I hope that you see it. I hope that's an idea that you hold on to every chance you get. Life is beautiful. I have seen my share of people coming and going in and out of my life. I've seen people pass away. And I've seen a plethora of people come into my life for the better. I've seen the birth of my children. I've seen the death of my mother. There are people that I wish were closer, that I could see more often, talk to more often. And yes, there are people that I wish would go away. But that's life. And it's beautiful. And at some point, you have to be thankful for that. You have to be thankful for every chance that you're giving. I'm sorry, every chance that you are given to see something through or to make a change. Or as one of my favorite people says, today is another day, another chance to make it better. Now again, as I say this, I'm doing laundry. I have 7 suitcases to pack, 2 carry-on bags to pack, and a whole lot of arrangements to make because my father is traveling overseas to be with my sister for a little while. My 2 oldest children are going to go spend some time with their biological mother. My wife and I are finally getting to go on our honeymoon. New Orleans, here we come. Somebody better have a plate ready for me because, listen, when I tell you that I am at peace with a great many things in my life, I mean it. All the ups and downs, trials and tribulations, all the silly little arguments, all the crazy things, I am at peace with who I am today, with how I got here. And I know that every day is going to be a little different. I know that the future will continually shape and reshape, but every day is a chance to get it right. My wife and I are taking our honeymoon. We are taking a week to see a different part of the world, to eat food, to walk through silly museums and take silly tours, take silly pictures, just to be around each other. Just to be able to sit across from one another with a sense of love and a sense of peace and experience something together. Because that's exactly what marriage is. It's having someone to share everything with. This woman is my wife. She knows me through and through. She knows what makes me cry. She knows what makes me laugh. She's heard all the stories of the good and the bad in my life. She's committed to sharing her life with me. All the things that may come, the good, the bad, the ugly, the terrible, the absolute triumph of being a happily married couple with a beautiful family. That's what we are committed to. It's not just a commitment to each other, it's a commitment to an entire world that we share. When our oldest goes off to college, we get to share that moment with each other, with our children, with our family and our friends. When the time comes and my father does pass away, my wife is there to share it with me. My children are there to share it with me. My family, my friends, we share that moment. So yes, even the hard ones, even the difficult, the painful, the draining moments in life, as people, we are meant to share those things together. And that's exactly what I want for the world. That's exactly what I want for my world and the people in it, the people around me. I want to be able to share in everything. Again, I'm terrible with quotes because my memory sucks. But as they say, the older we get, the larger our table should become. Invite everyone to the table. Everyone eats. Everyone shares. We don't push people away. We don't close our doors. We don't fence off our lawns. We open up. We let everyone in. Because ultimately, someone needs something. Maybe that's how I'll tie this in. Maybe that's what I learned from Mr. Lionel Richie today. You don't have to know someone to show them love. You don't have to know someone's entire story to know that they are deserving of love and respect. And sometimes it takes a stranger be able to give that to you. So as I close out this episode, I think that's exactly where I'll leave things. I don't care who you are. I don't care what's happening in your world or what's happening in their world. Find a stranger and be good. Be good to them. Be good for them, because ultimately it is good for you. Love is love is love. It doesn't matter where it's coming from. So go love somebody. Good night.